podcast from AusCert's 2009 conference is brought to you by Microsoft. For full risky business coverage of AusCert, point your browser to risky.biz.
Good morning. I'm very pleased to be here. And I was just checking with Graham how long I have, because I literally got off a plane from Vienna an hour ago. And I wasn't looking like this an hour ago, so my thanks to the hotel staff for finding me a shower. I want to talk a little bit about ICANN, and particularly our efforts on security, stability, and resiliency. But I also want to make these comments in the context of a broader policy debate about the whole issues of cybersecurity. And some of you will be aware, if just talking just from the, what's in the public arena, that the significant debates taking place within the United States have been followed very closely throughout the world about reactions to cybersecurity. Particularly in the United States, it's being framed in the context of responses to cyber espionage attacks in the American military industrial complex, from one particular country in particular, but not limited to that. And which is also in some respects a debate about whether this is an arena which sits within the national security framework, or whether this is an arena that sits within an economic policy framework. And I'm going to argue that is absolutely the key policy discussion of the age in terms of the internet. Primarily because if we take the commons and essentially militarize it, then we will end up with a return to a mercantilist approach to the internet that none of us have ever seen. In a previous life, I was, I've had a number of previous lives, so I'm glad I keep coming back. I helped run the Australian Trade Commission. For all of you involved in the internet, I want to ask a question. Anybody here been involved in trying to sell a good, not a service, a good overseas? You know, actually ship something from one place to the other. A couple of people. You heard of things like tariffs, non-tariff barriers, all that sort of stuff? You see, and seen any of that stuff on the internet, really? No. I'm going to come back to that, because that's one of the hearts of the problems we've got to deal with, is this issue. I was asked by someone fairly heavily involved in intelligence at one stage, beginning of this year, they said their view was coming that cyber attacks were becoming the greatest threat to the internet itself. And my response was, actually, I think it's the second greatest threat to the internet. The greatest threat to the internet is the inappropriate policy response to cyber attacks. And let me just talk that some detail. Now, that works. The button has got red and green on it, I think. I'm red-green colorblind, so I always find these things a challenge. Okay, so here's part of the point I'm trying to make, and if you don't mind my dropping names. I had a conversation with Kofi Annan 3 years ago, 4 years ago, trying to explain to him quickly the issues of the internet for someone who deals with the national security environment. Remember, this person's got to keep an eye on the Security Council, all those sort of serious fights about things like invading Iraq and what do you do about Darfur and all that sort of stuff happens in places like the Security Council. And for the national security environment, that still remains the world, driven by the nation state, a 500-year-old phenomenon. And, you know, if you go down further and you go into more traditional views, people's views of what's the nature of security online for the last 30, 50, 60 years, it tends to be more that sort of world. So it's where does the transit layer go? Where are the networks? You know, keep track on these sort of things. The difficulty, of course, is that's the internet. It does not, when Bob Kahn and Vince Cerf wrote the protocol in 72, they did not put geography in the protocol. It's a topological network, not a geographic network. And as a consequence, it causes all sorts of interesting challenges. The one great benefit it gives us is a single global interoperable internet, which means that your customers can deal with their suppliers or their customers anywhere in the world with a click of the button. We don't think about it. Right? We don't even think about the fact that we're going to look at a website, or that we're going to send a file, or that we think about file sharing, for God's sake. Peer-to-peer stuff. We don't even think about how that works when people are geographically. But I would argue to you that's the only global technology. The airline system is a multi-domestic system. The electricity system is a multi-domestic system. The telephone system is a multi-domestic system. This is the only truly global technology. And as a consequence, poses particular difficulties when we start to have conversations around cybersecurity, because that's the mindset. And so we have a challenge of how do we manage both? And that's partly where ICANN itself sort of fits in. So our role is to help to coordinate the secure and stable operations of the Internet's unique identifier system, which is not just the domain name system, it's also the IP addressing system, AES numbers, and actually we keep the protocol registries for the on behalf of the IETF, and so we've got hundreds of registries keeping all sorts of numbers and registries of people. Now, ICANN is formed as a governance model trying to deal with that. Right? How do you actually produce the rulemaking environment for a space that doesn't recognize geographic boundaries? And so I said to an Australian Prime Minister a long time ago, Prime Minister, the people who create the problem solve the problem. That's essentially the ICANN model. So it's international, it's multi-stakeholder, and it's about trying to ensure that the people who are involved in issues are involved in helping the solutions. And I want to come back to that at the end of my comments to you guys. So we have a specific group on the left there which deals with the IP addressing community. It's called the Address Supporting Organization. And for people in the Asia-Pacific, APNIC is a key part of that. We have a large, think of this as a parliament with many chambers. One chamber deals with the IP addressing group. One chamber deals with the generic name supporting organizations. Everybody who's interested in com, net, org, info, biz, I can go on. Both the registries, the registrars, but importantly, intellectual property interests, business interests, non-commercial interests, consumers. We have a country code name supporting organization, which has something like 89 country codes presently participating within that. And then we have a series of what we call committees or advisory committees. That large advisory committee there is actually a consumer user group. It's got about 130 different organizations around the world who participate in that process. We have a technical liaison group, particularly with people like W3C, ETSI in Europe, ITU. We have a specialized group on security and stability. We have the root server operators as one of the key groups. We have the Internet Engineering Task Force as direct liaison into the ICANN Board of Directors. And then we have a governmental advisory committee, which I chaired for its first 4 years, which has about 120 governments playing an interesting role of giving policy advice, not a direction to the ICANN process. And if you like to think of it, this is a series of chambers in a parliament, and the chambers all directly or indirectly elect a cabinet, and that's what the Board of Directors is. It's the cabinet. It has to come from 5 regions around the world. So there are directors from Europe, Africa, Latin America, North America, and the Asia-Pacific, as do, by the way, the leaderships of all the other organizations. They simply have to have that mix of their councils. I'm both on the board, and I also run the bureaucracy, if you want to put it that way. We have a staff of about 120 people supporting this. Now, I've gone through that for some detail because I want to come to this issue of how do you do international collaboration, and I'm going to come back to that to refer to this through this model. So I think the first and foremost, and this is one of the important messages in this debate that we have certainly been pretty heavily involved in, is to see the Internet as an ecosystem. Now, that may well sound sensible and straightforward to people like here, but if you're a 4-star general who last week was busy taking that hill over there, this is still a negotiation and a discussion. This is still trying to explain to people that the Internet is an ecosystem. It runs in system dynamics, and very interestingly, 90 to 95% of its assets are not in the hands of governments. It's bound by contract, and in some respects, it does not therefore sit easily with the traditional Lockean view, for those students of political science in the room, the 18th century Lockean concept that you join a society and part of that social contract is you give up some freedoms for the government to protect you. It's the basic protection. Hence in the West, we always hear politicians say the first responsibility of government is to protect its citizens. That actually comes from Locke. And the irony in this space, I think, is it's very hard to argue the Lockean contract because the vast amount of the resources are not sitting with the government. And so any one government is not in a position to say, I can provide security across the Internet, and we all know that. And hence the point that Graham made is that I think we need to have a view about this this issue of cybersecurity much more on the lines of public health. We should have a view that says the public health model of collaboration, cooperation, people having specific roles, exercising, is important. And we should think those through. The other point I'd make is that we should recognise a couple of facts. Governments have been doing warfare and espionage for the last 5,000 years, and my guess is they'll do it for the next 5,000 years. So we should just accept the fact that on the internet space, we're going to have cyber espionage and we're going to have cyber warfare. Right? It's the real debate, actually, I think, which has been interesting in Washington recently, is what are the rules around that? You know, what are the rules of, do the rules of warfare and armed conflict begin to apply to that space? And that's going to be an interesting set of discussions. But the other side of this is incredibly important, is that the rest of us have a very strong responsibility to ensure that the commons is clean. Because that's the really significant thing we have to be careful of in the next 5-10 years. We have to ensure that there's a focus on maintaining a clean commons. In that respect, this is very similar to the role public health plays to try to keep us all healthy. If there's going to be an army, there's going to be a police force, and there are going to be spooks. But most of us spend our time making certain people are secure in the sense that they're healthy, that the place works. So the analogy falls down a little bit on the edge, like all analogies. But we do need to be focused on what is important to maintain the health of the commons. So for specific data, I think Graham, in your introduction, you sort of pointed to this. You know, we've got these issues about secure data. A lot of the stuff is at the application layer, the consumer level. But we have issues now increasingly back in the infrastructure about maintaining secure data. And this is where both industrial and nation state cyber espionage, it becomes increasingly important. And then malicious disruption, DDoS and DNS servers. Now, one of the things that I think we have learned at ICANN and through that community is a big issue, which I still don't hear enough discussion about, is are your partners or suppliers and resellers secure? When we see the very large DDoS attacks on both the GTLD registries and in particular the root service, and I know the processes we have in place contractually, step by step back inside that operation to protect that. One of the things that I think I always find quite interesting is about this issue, are your partners or suppliers secure? And increasingly in a diverse globalized economic infrastructure, who are your suppliers? And that's actually one of the most, again, it's not a technical security debate, it's a policy security discussion inside companies. But it is fascinating. I mean, it is just fascinating. I won't give you, but I could give you a series of brand names that you would say, or they've got to be the most whatever. And I can tell you, they do not know who their suppliers are. And they do not know what the security is of each of those going down. And, so that remains a sort of an issue for specific actors. For the system as a whole, one of the things that I remain concerned about is that weak actors create externalities. In other words, we run the risk of, if this just put it in terms of country codes, we run the risk of failed states online. That we need to ensure that we don't end up with actors who play a role within the, so let's take the DNS to start with, who can actually end up, because they're not operating well, allow the misuse of the DNS. It's a similar issue when it comes, of course, to ISPs, and you mentioned BGP. Similar, you know, concerns about that, and then of course infrastructure being disrupted. This is a small chart, just a little illustration of a bot, and the growing complexity of attacks. I'm not going to go through that. Many of you people in the room know this is better than I do. One of the issues that we have seen, and I need to go back and reinforce, I mean, our mandate is around the unique identifier system, right? So our mandate does not extend to the transit layer, does not extend to PGP, and our mandate does not extend to the application layer. Now, a lot of the work that's happened in a lot of the, you know, attack vectors have used the application layer as the attack vector. But what we are beginning to see increasingly is the use of the DNS resolution as a form of command and control, and that people have moved from IP-based command and control mechanisms to DNS control command and control mechanisms, and now increasingly to peer-to-peer command and control mechanisms, which are some respects a little more worrying or interesting in that they're taking him down to another layer where there's nobody who has a coordination role. The interesting questions that start beginning to emerge out of this is who's responsible? Notice the next question, who is subject to retaliation? And that's a question beginning to emerge out of that previous discussion I talked about before. When you start thinking about this as a national security thing, people start saying, well, there's offense and defense. What type of legal notice arrest is digital disruption, and should it be part of a cooperative mitigation and defense program? So the real issue, I think, when we think about this, is that there's got to be more attention about, as we've said down there, attacking the swamps, not the fever. So there does need to be attempts to really look at, are there things within the protocols we need to look at? Is there revision of the protocols that need to be done? Are there additional elements we put forward? One of the things that we have been actually running in trial for 2 years now is DNSSEC, DNS security. It's excellent. See, they're tracking me already. Extension on the root server, and we are working with our partners, particularly the Department of Commerce in the United States and VeriSign, looking at issues around signing of the root. A number of CCTLDs and other TLDs are already signing their TLDs, and we'll expect to see more of that. Now, that has a series of interesting implications because we'll obviously have a period of time when people are going to need to have access both to a non-signed and a signed root if we actually do move down that path while people do a transition process. There's another issue I want to come back to here shortly, which is about takedown notices, which I'll come down to. So I've said before, our bylaws are quite specific about our function, which is to coordinate over all the global internet system unique identifiers. We want to ensure DNS system stability and resiliency and protect registrants. We are a contributor to a whole series of discussions around the identification of DNS abuse, risks to security, stability and resiliency of DNS. And we're not in the business of content control, and we're not involved in issues related to cyber espionage and cyber warfare. Now, I have 120 governments in our governmental advisory committee alone. You can understand why it's important for me to say we're not involved in cyber espionage and cyber warfare. But I want to, again, keep reinforcing, if you watch the media discussion, and you're going to see this increasingly flowing out of the US to other countries, you're going to see this becomes the sexy thing for media discussion. And we need to be very careful about this because the natural dynamics that will apply to politicians and bureaucrats and others will be they've got to be seen to be doing something, and the natural way of doing that tends to be national security. And we need to be very careful as a community to be sending the message which says, A, this is really important, but B, the model is a public health model. You need to have people who are responsible for their own health. You need to have people who are going to play the roles of doctors. You need people who looks after the hospitals. Who's the Center for Disease Control? There's going to be a pandemic at some stage. How do we have resiliency in response to the pandemic? That sort of a view of the world is more valuable than simply saying it's a question of putting up higher walls. This is the advertisement part, so I'll get through this bit. We are responsible for IANA operations, and that's our highest priority. And we help the DNS addressing community to strengthen security, stability, and resiliency. I'm sort of repeating myself a bit here, so I'm going to flip through this. Okay, forget that. It was just variations of saying the same thing. What are some of the things that we actively do? We have within the registry contracts for generic top-level domains and their registrars a series of requirements under the contracts for people to do things. For instance, we are requiring data escrow for all registries and for all the registrars, and it's nearly 100% of all registrants in the generic top-level domains are now present in data escrow. So if somebody falls over, we've got a mechanism re-pulling their data. We have to maintain the whois information, which many of you know is an ongoing, interesting discussion. We have other provisions sitting within those contracts that we require, including we have got security emergency provisions within the contracts if we need to implement changes quickly with the registrar or registry. There's a series of amendments we're doing to the registrar accreditation agreements at the moment that reinforce that in terms of seeking protection for registrants. I've mentioned DNSSEC. We have been holding a series of what we've called sort of global symposiums on DNS security, stability and resiliency. We partnered with Georgia Tech in January to do a session in Atlanta. And we'll be looking to do these probably on an annual basis, and I'd be looking for this community to be involved more. We want to internationalize that as much as we can. That was a fairly international meeting as it was, but we'll be looking to do this on an annual basis. And it is simply a symposium. It is a discussion place for us to talk about issues around DNS security stability. One of the biggest things we've been trying to do recently is working with the country code managers on a capacity building initiative. And I'd like to particularly congratulate the Asia-Pacific Top Level Domain Group who took the leadership in this, and we've been doing it with the regional ones for Europe, for Africa, also for Latin America. And where we're coming from on this is trying to ensure that we work as a community to share as much as we can from one top level domains administrator's experience to others, and also for those of us who've got responsibilities around the root service system to share some of that experience. Some of the most interesting stuff in that experience, if I can give you just a small example. On the occasions that we get a big attack on the root servers, my people who are involved in keeping our particular L root and coordinating the other root servers who are busy trying to fight the attack have me hounding them all the time because I need to immediately know what's going, who's doing, where's it coming from, and all these questions you can't answer. Because I need to deal with a series of political actors I need to keep informed. I need to deal with the media almost straight away. And I need to send reinsurances that we know what we're doing. And then there's a series of follow-on communications that are required. I share that as a small example of one of the reactions to an attack because it's as relevant for the country codes. And the tradition, again, this is one of the issues of definitions of security and resiliency. People tend to think of it in terms of, am I technically secure? While where we've seen the most damaging nature of these sorts of network-type attacks is not actually on the technical level. Network-type attacks normally are to try to prove something else, one of which is to show that you don't have control. And so we've been working with the CC community, sharing some of the experiences and working on emergency reaction programs and starting the process of looking at exercises for people to increasingly understand what sort of response rate, how do you respond to particular things, who needs to be involved, who needs to be involved in discussions. Because, again, sending a message to a community that this is now somewhat under control, that this is, we know what to do with these sort of network attacks is important. I would argue to you that's as irrelevant in any company as it is within the network for a particular country or big ISP as it is for the system as a whole. The root service system last year carried something like $2.8 trillion in e-commerce. That's the GNP of Germany. So as that number continues to grow very strongly, you can understand people are going to want to know that there is some assurance. Not only, again, my point is about resiliency, not just about security, but resiliency. People know how to respond. They know how to get back on track. They know how to deal with things. And then I mentioned this issue. We're trying to do work with the community to understand effective approaches. And I'm going to make a few comments a bit later about our role in helping to respond to Conficker. I've just talked about that, so I can forget that. I want to talk about this Conficker worm response because it's actually an interesting example of this collaborative model that I was speaking about earlier. We were asked to be involved in responding to Conficker by a group of some of the names on the sponsorship group up there and others and a number of the TLDs, particularly because Conficker has been using the DNS as the command and control mechanism. Now, our role is obviously not to be the Internet's policeman, but we were happy to be part of a group that worked collaboratively together to help to respond to this. In one of the versions of Conficker, there were about 15 TLDs involved, and we had a situation where one sitting around a table with a group of people, Microsoft and Symantec and a bunch of other people and TLDs, FBI and various people. And we were trying to deal with one particular TLD, which was important to get in contact with, and for various reasons there was little response. from the usual patterns. Now, I sent an email to the leadership of that TLD and had a response within 2 hours, and we actually got the needed responses to take place. And what was a reinforcement to the big commercial players and to the sort of law enforcement types was that the collaboration that sort of the ICANN model has of people working together to solve problems also produces a sense of community, and that the sense of community is an important part of any form of response and resiliency in this area. We saw the same thing with the Google problem with Pakistan earlier this year. You know, the NANOG lists were probably the most important way of responding to that particular activity. And that's an important message that we as a community need to keep reinforcing. We need to keep reinforcing and retelling to the more people who are getting more involved in cybersecurity. We need to keep telling them that there is mechanisms of coordination and collaboration internationally that sit within our engineering and other forms of governance that are an important part of responses to here, and they need to be understood and reinforced. With D, I think we've been in contact with 115 registries around the world, giving them information as to how to respond to the command and control mechanism inside Configure. So it's gone from, you know, from 10 or 15 to 115 in the next version. And now increasingly is using peer-to-peer. But I want to just keep reinforcing this model and this example, because I think it's an important thing at the moment. I also just want to quickly flag another thing, which is, I know some of you are quite concerned about, and that is the whole issue of takedown, and takedown of particular either IP addresses or probably more importantly, takedown of domain names, again, if they're used at the heart of bots. We are going through the process of looking at the potential introduction of new generic top-level domains. And this is a very major issue. It's been 3 or 4 years in policy making, and we are doing a very intense process of consultation on potential implementation. We've got up to 4 rounds of consultation on the implementation planning. If you were to put ICANN and intellectual property in the same Google search bar, you would see all the hate mail I get. It's quite valid responses from the intellectual property community, concerns about massive expansion, the opportunities for cyber squatting, and their need to have defensive registrations, etc. And we are looking at addressing that. Their interests overlap with the community, the security community's interests quite significantly, especially around these issues of takedown. At the heart of takedown notices is liability. It's the cascading problems of liability from the whoever plays a regulatory or some semi-regulatory role with the TLD, to the TLD, to the registrar, to the reseller, and down to the user. And the best time to address those issues is when you're first formulating the contractual basis for those TLDs, which is what we are doing over the next 3 to 4, 5, 6 months. If people have got an interest, if people really do want to input into the security type things you're concerned about when it comes to the domain name system, the new GTLDs will become the high watermark, I think, of contractual terms that will relate to that space for quite some time. And if potentially over time, the existing GTLD contracts will begin to reflect that. And what we see a lot happens is that CCTLD arrangements tend to copy what happens at ICANN. So my basic message is, if you've got a concern about takedown notices and how they work and the liability issues from getting registrars and registries to do things in areas that you're concerned about, now is the time to have that input into the ICANN website. If you go to ICANN.org, and there's a series of consultations around new GTLDs, and there's a set of proposals up from the intellectual property community for particular clauses in the contracts, I'd be asking you to similarly look at that and make public input, because I'd very much value that. So that's the end of what I was here to say. Let me come back and keep repeating my core message. Collaboration, coordination, communication is at the heart of the way the internet's been put together, and it's the heart of the model for which it continues to get run. We need, as a community, to keep reinforcing that in all of the discussions that are going to continue to emerge around cybersecurity. And we need to keep engaging people. I think in Australia, for instance, I think it's going to be relatively easy to have that discussion. In other parts of the Asia Pacific, it's going to be more difficult. But we need to keep reinforcing that message. And we need to keep reinforcing the message that we cannot afford to put a single global interoperable internet at risk by inadvertently letting people say, well, we've got to put up more forms of governmental controls, whatever, because of security. At the same time, obviously, the security thing is an incredibly important issue, so we need to come to the party. And it's going to be the key policy discussion, I think, for at least the next 12 months. We'll be right back.